Hello, everybody. Good morning, and thanks for arriving early here today. My name is Gabriel Reynish. I am an epidemiologist and the program manager for the Early Aberration Reporting System program. I'm going to be demonstrating. I'm going to be demonstrating the EARS tool for you all this morning. Bear with me a second as I load my presentation here. I'm doing it virtually. So I've been in this position for almost 2 years, during which I've been working on the version of EARS that I'm going to be demonstrating today. I think since we have a small group, it would be useful for me as far as kind of managing what I present to you all today. I'd like a show of hands quickly. How many of you here have already used EARS before? Okay, great. How many of you here represent state or local public health departments? Okay. All right, well, how many of you here are familiar with syndromic surveillance? I'm guessing most of you all. Okay, wonderful. So what I'd like to do today is kind of give you some background about EARS and then go into some greater detail about some of the core functionality of EARS with my slides before I conduct a demonstration of our most recent version release. So in a nutshell, EARS is a tool that was designed to assist state and local public health professionals with analysis of disease surveillance data. And this is very different probably from a lot of the types of systems and implementations that you might have seen at this conference today. EARS is not the standards-based tool. It's not meant to, it's not designed on a hardwired connectivity between your data sources and the system. It is strictly an analytic tool. It's designed to be very flexible, to be data agnostic. We are, in some respects, trying to be an analysis component to every type of data structure and every type of user. And that's reflected, actually, in our user base and how EARS is used across the world. I think it's most easily understood in the context of the early warning response framework for which EARS was originally designed to operate in. And this is something here that I borrowed from the World Health Organization, this framework as it's described here. And so you have the five steps of collecting data, identifying signals, evaluating those signals a little further, and then raising a public health alert if something actually is of public health importance, and responding to that event, and then communicating about it and evaluating your response effectiveness. So where EARS plays a role is in steps 2, 3, and 5 here. And I'll show you exactly how in the demonstration. So there, again, I can't emphasize enough that EARS is a tool. It does not collect any data. It is something, so the onus is on the user to already have the data and understand what is in the data set at a basic level before you begin some EARS analysis. So EARS began approximately 10 years ago, and it was designed principally as a drop-in surveillance tool around special security events, or as I think Dina referred to it, as events of national significance, like Obama's inauguration or major sporting events that might be targets, let's say, for a bioterroristic attack. So it was designed as a tool that could flexibly just be stood up very rapidly, usually maybe a week or two prior to the event, analyzing any type of data that might be of interest to the health department that was tasked with ensuring there was no type of nefarious kind of activities surrounding the event by monitoring healthcare utilization primarily. And so the data sources initially used in this regard were emergency department chief complaints and diagnoses. These were usually just data dumps for a few weeks from hospitals in the area or Sentinel facilities. School absenteeism rates also was something that was initially used, as well as data from call centers like 911 call centers or poison control centers, and examination of over-the-counter medication sales. So in the last 10 years or so, as informatics has evolved and as kind of the user community has grown and implemented EARS, the use cases for such a tool has broadened significantly. And it now includes, in addition to this drop-in surveillance capability, now routine surveillance of a broader set of disease and illness injuries, not just bioterrorism things. So things that it monitors very well are ILI, GI disease, asthma injuries. It's also useful for when you know there's an outbreak, so rather than just detecting an outbreak, to actually track the outbreak's progress and hopefully the resolution. It's found significant utility after disasters. And then if there are a number of jurisdictions who have close relationships with law enforcement or the intelligence community, and they often use tools like this to verify that any threats communicated through those channels are actually not manifesting in any apparent changes in healthcare utilization. So there's a broader set of data sources now that support these functions. So previously we had, or initially there were just data dumps from hospitals. Now there are health departments using real-time feeds. There are health departments also using EARS to analyze laboratory results or the trends in state reportable diseases and conditions. Data on medical care has expanded to analyze data collected at shelters or at refugee camps, monitoring the individuals responding after an event. A good example of that is after the oil spill in the Gulf. You have a population that's responding to the cleanup there for months. So this was a tool that was used in that regard. And then it's also used to monitor attendees at mass gatherings. It's been used at the last three Olympic Games and many political conventions and other types of mass gatherings. So this is, I guess, a complicated slide attempting to simplify kind of the functional and model of EARS and how the different versions break down in their technical components to support that model. So direct your attention up to the three boxes at the top connected by the two arrows under the functional model. So essentially, a user would tell EARS what to do. EARS executes that analysis, and then you visualize the output. So each of those three functions is supported by a different technical component in each of the versions of EARS. And so in the table below is a listing of the versions that are currently available on our website for downloading as well. And so there's three of them, and then there's the one at the bottom is this open source version that we're anticipating in fall of 2012 that we just received some funding to develop. The version I'm going to be demonstrating for you today is EARS SAS version 5.1. That's the one at the top row. I think I have this. Oops. Okay, I have a little light here. So this uses a kind of a wizard-like front-end user interface that's written in a .NET framework in C#. The middle engine that executes the analysis is SAS, base SAS, this means that you as a user, if you want to use EARS, you have to have SAS. This version runs on, if you want to run this version of EARS, it runs on SAS version 9.1.3 and later. On the as far as visualizing the output, you can do it in two ways. You can produce these static HTML reports, which are often used after disasters to populate the portals for emergency operations centers. Or you can use the kind of interactive module that we developed. So prior versions of EARS, I'm not going to go into the detail on those components here, but you see them. I think it's worth mentioning that the EARS X version right here, this is happens to be the tool of choice internationally. This is primarily because international users do not have are not using SAS, or our users internationally are often in low resource settings where the cost for a Microsoft Windows operating system and Excel are costly, and so we've seen that dichotomy. Domestically, it's the SAS version primarily that's being used, and internationally, it's the Excel version that's being used. The SAS version is much more robust, and we haven't. You see, we released the Excel version in 2006. We haven't completed any development on it since then, that will be replaced with our open source version in the next year. So I want to talk to you briefly or describe in greater detail the two really core EARS functions that have made EARS popular. The first is indicator processing. In previous versions of EARS, this was known as ESP or TSP. You can think of an indicator as being synonymous with a syndrome. For those of you who are not familiar with syndromic surveillance, that is essentially a grouping of illness or injury symptoms. So what EARS does is it facilitates a user's creation of indicator categories that are based on text strings in your data. A text string can be either an ICD-9 or 10 code, LOINT codes, free text, really whatever you would like it to be. EARS then scans your data and matches observations in your data to the indicator categories you've created. And after it does that, those observations are then grouped together by the indicators and any other stratification variables so that you can analyze the trends in the indicators. So this is most easily depicted using the following example. You can consider this as an excerpt from an electronic medical record with here I'm just showing three variables, date, a patient identifier, and this patient-reported chief complaint field, which is essentially like this free text field. What EARS does is when you create these definitions, it would create this new indicator variable or the syndrome category. On the second row, you'll note that that patient's chief complaint resulted in him or her mapping to multiple syndromes. The reason I have the blank row there on the second to last patient is, again, to emphasize the fact that the onus is on the user to understand their data. So in this instance, the user did not capture this type of chief complaint because they didn't create a definition that would capture that. So as you continue to use the tool, you become more and more familiar with your data, you tweak your definitions, and hopefully you capture more and more of your visits in categories. So what EARS then does is, as I mentioned the previous slide, it summarizes your data to generate a table in this structure, and this is a structure that our next core feature is applied on, and that is our statistical aberration detection methods, which I'll describe on the next slide. There's another aspect of the indicator processing that I think is worth mentioning because it's new in this version I'm going to demonstrate, and that is that it allows you to aggregate records that are linked to one another before indicator processing is completed on the data set. And so again, here's the similar excerpt of the medical record to depict this, but in this instance I want to point out that there are multiple observations for this patient with the identifier number 23. So what EARS does is it allows you to indicate that you have this patient identifier in your data, and what it then does is it concatenates those two observations into one row so that you are not having multiple or a singular patient being or contributing to an indicator more than once. And so after indicator processing is done, you have the summarization of data. EARS uses statistical algorithms to scan your data and see if there are values that are greater than a derived expected value. And there are four algorithm options which you can use in EARS, C1 through C4. The mild, medium, and ultra components of the names are meant to describe the increasing sensitivity with each of those algorithms. The healthcare component of the C4 algorithm is meant to indicate that sensitivity and actually specificity too are optimized when you use the C4 data with specifically emergency department data. If anyone in the room here is interested, I can go into much greater detail on the algorithms, but I would reserve that more for a statistical conference. These algorithms, I think it's interesting to know, they're based on the cumulative sum calculation, which was borrowed from the manufacturing industry, where they're used as a quality control method. So, before we get into the demonstration, I think it's worth mentioning that what's really made EARS popular is, number one, is it's free. And the second is that users retain their own data. So this, you know, data ownership is a big issue for a number of health departments in many instances because of laws. Utility that has garnered popularity is the fact that it can be installed and used for the first time in minutes, depending on the complexity of your data set. So this is extremely useful if you're unfamiliar with the tool and you are arriving on scene after a disaster and you're told, okay, we're going to use EARS to analyze the data collected here at shelter. So that's very useful. There's been a number of advancements in algorithms over the years. We've kept to our core simple algorithms. We believe, or our philosophy is that the simpler the algorithms are, that the more likely they are to be utilized in an effective manner. We don't want the algorithms to kind of go over the head of our users or appear as kind of a black box. You don't understand what they're doing. The other point that's really, I think, worth mentioning here is how flexible and adaptable EARS is. It's a desktop application, so you download it from the website and you install it on your laptop, and you can take it in the field if you want to run on your desktop. You don't have to have an internet connection to run EARS. It's easily customized to local and event needs. This is great utility. and you can do that very rapidly. It really works with any data that can be counted. If you have a date field and a count field, you can run ears. And so you can run on anything. And then another thing that health departments have found useful is that the source code is accessible. So there's actually 12 health departments, 5 cities, and 7 state health departments that have taken the source code and used it either as the crux or components of it in the development of their own homegrown systems. This is something actually that we support and advocate. Two of those health departments have actually won HIMSS awards for their systems, and so we're proud of our contribution there. And so as health departments kind of evolve in their utility of a tool like this, they realize that they'd like to integrate it in with maybe hardwired connectivity to hospitals or use it to analyze various surveillance data sources simultaneously or display the output simultaneously. And what we've done to accommodate this type of user is we've actually we've inserted a lot of documentation into the code, so any developer can come in there and understand what we've done. The other thing that we've done is we've actually sacrificed efficiency in some instances for simplification of the code, so that it's more easily understood. Okay, so I'm going to conduct a demonstration now. Okay, so when you open up ears, you're greeted with this screen here. This is the first screen or the welcome screen of the front end wizard that helps you to set up your analysis. There's a few things you can do here. You can set up a new analysis with this button. You can open up an analysis you've previously created and modify it or rerun it because maybe your data set's been updated, or you realize that you want your new analysis is very similar to a previous one you ran and you just want to tweak the original one. You can also, with this screen, just view the reports of a previously run analysis. And with this new feature here in version 5.1, you can rerun a project and differentiate between aberrations you've previously seen and new ones since you last ran it. And this is designed for users who are running ears on the same data set that gets updated with a regular frequency, and so it helps you to manage the time and evaluation of the output. So I'm going to pull up here a prior project. And so once you enter, if you're creating a new project or a prior project, you are the screen that appears is one similar to like this. What you have at the top is the title of the screen that you're on in the wizard. Along the left-hand side, you have all of the various screens that you might encounter as you're setting up your analysis. Currently, we're on the very last screen in the wizard that's identified for you by the fact that you have a green arrow here beside it. This is the review and save project screen. So because I've already created this project, it just takes me to the screen that shows me all of the various parameters that I might have I've set in previously creating this analysis, and you can scroll through all that. So there's quite a number of things that you can have the option for selecting when you create a project. So I'm going to take you directly to the first screen, just kind of walk you through some of the various screens. Because this is a wizard, you don't have to fill out information on all of the screens. It takes you through to the screens you need to complete based on the answers you make along the way. And it also restricts kind of your answers with pull-down menus versus having to type things in as was done with previous versions of ears. So this eliminates a lot of the user entry error or conflicting types of choices that one might make. So in this screen, as the title indicates, this is where you tell ears where your data set is located on your computer, what is the data type. You can see these are the various types of data that are accepted by ears. And you would browse to that location. You see there's some questions grayed out here. This is, again, part of this, the business rules associated with this wizard. So it's not necessary that you answer these because they apply to a different data type. So you use these buttons here at the bottom to advance through the various screens. And on this screen here, you get to tell ears what is the structure of your data. So ears accepts five different structures of data, which is pretty neat. So you can either provide ears with data that's already summarized, meaning that you have essentially a structure where you have a date field and then a count, or you can have patient level data or kind of observation level data that you want to assign to indicator categories that are then summarized. And various other types of structures. We have a very robust help guide that not only provides on each screen technical guidance, but also kind of epidemiologic decision support or an explanation for why this feature exists in the tool, why we created it. So on this screen, you would find, for example, all the different types of examples of the data structures that ears accepts, so you can kind of identify what is the structure that your data is in before you make the selections on this screen. So what you do along the way, essentially, is you assign variables in your data set to a functional role using the wizard. In this question here, you're asked, what is the column in your data set that holds your date variable? Ears, when you after you had told it where your data set is, it went out and read all the variable names and the formats that they're in, and then it provides you here with a listing of the variables that are in the proper format to be used as a date variable. Again, the onus here is on you to understand your data set and know which field applies where. So what I'd like to do here is briefly show you the data set that we're going to be analyzing in this demonstration. This is data from 8 different hospitals in a jurisdiction at the patient level. It's fairly robust data set. You can see there's things like the mode of arrival that would be useful, like for severity, acuity designation here. You have a discharge disposition, visit date, sex, race, ethnicity. You have a zip code. Let's see here. You have a text-based chief complaint, some diagnostic codes, if a patient was admitted or not, their admit diagnosis, some other clinical information you might find in a medical record, like the temperature, blood pressure, respiration. So it's a fairly robust data set, and I'll show you how we can analyze it. So I'm going to speed up here going through some of these screens. What I want to show you is how EARS facilitates creating definitions for indicator processing. It actually uses Excel spreadsheets to do that. This is one aspect that is not controlled through the wizard, and we did that to support users who were using prior versions of EARS to enable them to continue to use definitions that they'd created, because this is probably the most time-consuming aspect. There's two spreadsheets that you use for this purpose. You can ignore the ones that say copy beside it. And they're hierarchical in nature. The first is the lowest level or most granular level is the symptom spreadsheet. I'll take you to that. Across the top here, you have a symptom name. And below each symptom name is a category of, are the text strings you would search for in your data set within, for example, your chief complaint field to assign them to this symptom name. This is actually the starter set that comes along with the EARS tool when you download it. It's been informed by years of use from health departments, and we continue to tweak this. As you can see, there's quite a bit included in here. And so what you do is you would use the symptom spreadsheet to define syndromes or indicators in the syndrome spreadsheet. And this might be a small or difficult for you to see. I'm going to blow this up. So again, this is also a list of syndromes that are provided. Right now there's 45 different or 44 different syndromes here that are provided to you in this starter set. What they do is they allow you to combine the symptoms together in the prior spreadsheet in a number of different ways using a little more complicated logic. So you can group things using parentheses, here's, or and or logic. You can use nots as negation. And so this is about as close to natural language processing as you can get using a text parsing tool. And again, this is facilitated using Excel spreadsheets, so you don't have to complete any coding. So how am I doing on time here? I've got about 5 minutes? Okay. So once you set up those definitions, you assign a variable that EARS would be parsing for the definitions. You can determine whether you want to calculate a rate. You can choose various stratification variables for your analysis. On the analysis options screen, you can choose the time unit interval by which to complete the analysis. So EARS will automatically summarize your data by the various units here. Here's where you can select which algorithms you would like to utilize. You have the option of using a static baseline here. This was designed for use after a disaster, so that you can essentially mark the period that the disaster event or the event began, and have your baseline or your comparison period for the algorithms always be prior to that event, so that the event, so to speak, doesn't contaminate your baseline. You can exclude specific dates of the week. I'm going to skip over that setting right now and move on to this ability here where you can create manual thresholds. And so this is depicts some new features here in our tool where you essentially can assign a value to each aberration that allows you to prioritize which ones you look at. So you can either eliminate aberrations from appearing in your output using a count threshold, so your syndromes have to exceed a particular count in order for them to appear as an anomaly in your output. The newer aspect of this here is this recurrence interval threshold. So what this allows you to do is to establish how rare an anomaly has to be before you want to see it in your output. This is really useful because if you only have, like, let's say 5 minutes a day to go in and look at your results, you're essentially guaranteeing that you're looking at the top few anomalies based on their rarity and their magnitude. And so this is you enter this threshold as in a unit of days. So if I enter 1,000 here, this would mean that I'm limiting my anomalies in my output to only those that are of a magnitude that are rare enough that they only occur once every 1,000 days. So I'm going to just go right to the output in the interest of time. And what you'll be greeted with is a series of thumbnails that are grouped by the syndromes and any stratification variables that you chose in your analysis. So here, in this analysis, I'd stratified by a facility. I don't get to see my entire screen on this. So it's grouped by my syndromes, which are listed here on the left-hand side. And then in the titles here, you see the value of the strata, which was a hospital. And we had 8 hospitals in this instance. So this is actually real data, so you get the impression of what it really looks like. Some of these graphs are sparsely populated, and that's simply because there were just a few visits that mapped from this hospital for the animal category syndrome. I'm going to take you, so you can navigate this screen in a few ways. You can either just scroll down here through the various thumbnails here until you find one that appears interesting. For example, this one shows some aberrations here for asthma. And so, or you can go back up to the top and click directly on a syndrome name to go directly to that one if you're interested in it. So this is designed to allow you to rapidly review a large amount of data very quickly. And then if you see a graph that interests you because something's popping, you can click on it. And what this does is it opens up an interactive screen that allows you to drill down into your data a little more here. So what you see here is the time series and the thumbnail image in a little greater detail. So the blue is the count data, the dashed lines are the expected values based on the various algorithms that I ran. Aberrations are identified here with these pink symbols. What I can, you know, navigate through here, I can convert this to a bar graph and do a number of manipulations. But where this tool really becomes useful is that the data that populates this graph is provided below here. So what you have actually at the very bottom is the patient level data that contributed to this graph. And if I were to click on a particular point here, I'm taken immediately to those locations in the two data sets below. So at the very bottom, I see my patient level data. I can start to examine on a very detailed level what are exactly the chief complaints that result in this patient mapping to this indicator, and then start to do kind of a preliminary investigation to see whether this is truly an event of public health significance. Are these patients all ambulatory? Do they have some kind of other some kind of other homogeneity among them that would make me suspicious of this blip? And then in this table here, you have the kind of empirical values that come out of the statistical algorithms that help you to understand kind of the magnitude of the anomaly. So, told right now, I have 20 seconds. Feels like I'm on a TV show looking at a, you know, countdown here for a bomb here. I'll show it to you. I got 10 seconds now. So I should wrap up. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. If anybody has any questions, I'll answer them in 1 second. You can hang around after the session.
Absolutely. So thanks, everyone, and thanks for bearing with us through some of the challenges and hanging out after the time. So round of applause for our presenters this morning. And do stick around if you have questions. And we'll take them.
Feel free to really get up and walk out, but I would like to highlight there's, because EARS source code is accessible, these are some of the community coding efforts that have resulted in I think, nice advancements of the tool. It's been translated to other languages, Spanish, Turkish. The output's been utilized to populate Google Earth maps. Kentucky has done some really nice things. You can see, actually, the emerging vendor has done that nicely. Helped other programs develop newer algorithms and used it with them. There's kind of scenario-specific syndrome packages. And these are some suggestions for future development. We hope to kind of coordinate all of these efforts and maybe make some of those versions available to you at some point in the future. So you sure. So the question is, I think, have we considered producing a table that sorts the aberrations by the recurrence interval value? Is that
yes?
Okay. So you have that capability in this demonstration. I haven't shown it, but on the had I chosen to run the recurrence interval threshold, you would have had another column in this data set, in this table up here in the output data, that had the exact recurrence interval value. And what you could do is click on it. This is, you could sort by it. So, but this is already once you're with looking at a particular syndrome graph. One of the all of the output tables that populate this are available. So you could take that SAS data set and perform that sort on all of your syndromes if you wanted to. We haven't produced that table, but that would be something that we'd like to do, actually, in future versions. But you can do that kind of on a syndrome-specific basis. I think it's probably worth highlighting that. So what this recurrence interval allows you to do is, let's say you have an anomaly of maybe only three visits, but it's for a category that might identify like some unexplained deaths, and you have another aberration that has maybe 200 visits for kind of your ILI syndrome, and both of those may have comparable recurrence intervals, and so you would. You know, it's not the recurrence interval is not necessarily based on the actual count, but the difference between the count and what you would expect.
And if as a user who's trying to get into the newer version of ERS from 4.5, if we wanted to have access to the source code, we contact directly or via the ERS?
No, it's available in the download. So when you install ERS, I installed it in my program file folder. If you go to the program subfolder, all of the SAS code is there. So you're looking at it right here. There's these, you know, seven or eight subroutines. All of them are actually controlled by this one program here, depending on. So we also simplified our code so that you have just one SAS program to rule all the rest of them. We had a really complicated tree structure in prior versions. You could one macro called another macro, which called another macro, and you trying to follow them, you could drive yourself crazy. In this, with this setup here, you have this one bit of this one program, and then it calls each of these if they're necessary.
And the output itself is going to be created by the .NET application, correct?
Right. So all of the tables that are used by that .NET application are available wherever you choose to. When you complete and going through the wizard setup on the very last screen, you say save your project, or you get to tell it where you want your output to go, and that's where there's going to be like four SAS tables, either that contain your raw data and some summary data, and then some other data that identify what are your strata that you're using, and all of that's there with really it's a rich data set. A lot more information from the algorithms are stored there too. So you can use that for, if you don't want to use the EARS output module, you could use those tables to do whatever analysis you would want. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, everyone.